boxes in my closet marked work clothes and special occasion. The whole idea of buying a beach house and opening an iced tea shop was to kick back and dress down. The joke was on me as I ravaged the boxes in search of something perfect for a fancy party at the aforementioned tea shop. 3 boxes later, I unearthed a fitted cocktail dress, tag still attached. The heart-shaped neckline and halter top were made of satin to match a thick band at the waist. The glossy black was covered in sets of bright red cherries with thin green stems. And the look was so perfectly vintage, I nearly swooned, which was why I'd bought it to begin with. I'd just never had an occasion to wear it. I slid the dress over my hips and admired the way the cut made me look like a pinup girl. For the first time in a long while, I didn't feel plus-sized. I felt curvy and desirable, like Marilyn Monroe or Betty Boop. All I needed was a cute set of black heels and grandma's pearls to pull it together, and I knew where to find those. I strutted down the stairs and into the cafe, prepared to ask Hannah and my great-aunts what they thought of the dress, but they weren't alone. Hordes of guests stood in clusters throughout the room, chatting and smiling. My heart clenched, and I made a run for the fridge. Clara caught me by the wrist and shook her head. "It's all done, dear. We put everything out as soon as the first couple knocked." She leaned closer to my ear. "Folks were early and lined up on your porch." "They came early?" I squeezed Aunt Clara's hand. "Hello," I greeted guests with a broad and genuine smile. "Mr. and Mrs. Waters." I pulled the older couple into my arms as a group hug. "I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for coming." Mr. Waters straightened his jacket when I released him.
"We wouldn't miss it."
His wife smiled brightly. "You've done a lovely job here. Everything looks amazing." I winked at my aunt standing arm in arm behind the counter. "I had plenty of help, so I'll try not to take all the credit. I hope you'll sample a little of everything. Help yourself whenever you're ready." I shook their hands again and turned to welcome another round of guests. Sandy from the ice cream shop paused just inside the doorway. "Come in," I waved, hustling over to meet him. "Welcome to Sun, Sand, and Tea. I'm so glad you're here."
"Thank you,"
he said, looking more at ease when a number of guests called out to him. "I'll let you mingle," I said. "Help yourself to whatever you'd like." I scanned the bustling cafe, full of smiling, chatting friends. Then I stopped to take it all in. This was what I dreamed of. I made another pass at the buffet to be sure nothing was getting cold or warm. Everything was disappearing fast. Hannah was positioned behind the counter, moving double time on refill duty, topping off the bowls and trays as each ran low, while Aunt Fran manned the tea jugs, protecting them against potential poisoners and delivering fresh glasses to anyone who asked. People were eating and drinking. I pressed a palm to my grateful heart. A fork clattered onto the floor, and I bent to retrieve it. A slick wolf whistle sounded behind me, and I turned to tell the culprit what I thought of it. Detective Hayes smiled back at me, only a foot away. His impish grin told me he knew exactly the sort of response to expect. I forgave him immediately. He didn't just come to my party. He dressed for it. The simple black slacks and tie were perfectly understated. The cuffs of his crisp white dress shirt had been rolled to the elbows, exposing ropes of tan muscle in his forearms and making him look completely at ease. Meanwhile, I felt a bit faint. "Detective Hayes," I greeted, offering my hand. He gave my palm a gentle squeeze.
"I think it's probably time you called me Grady."
"Grady?" I echoed, trying the name out on my lips. He held my stare and my hand several moments longer than manners required. Then he let his soft gaze tour my body, head to toe.
"You sure clean up nice."
"Back at ya," I said, fighting a fierce blush and interlacing my fingers in front of me when he released my hand. "Are you here alone?"
"Yep."
"Business or pleasure?" I asked,
feeling a little saucy. I blame the dress. A little of both, I guess. I didn't want to miss your party, and given the day you had yesterday, I thought you might need a little emotional support. Clearly you don't.
I tip my head toward Hannah and the ants. I had a crew helping with the labor today. My emotional state is a whole other story. He smiled back, flashing that dimple.
Are you happy?
Right now? Absolutely. I leaned in close, getting a delicious whiff of his cologne, and rose on my toes to whisper in his ear, "People are eating my food. They don't think it will kill them."
Grady laughed. I'm glad, and I'm sorry I put that idea into anyone's head.
I stepped back. Did you also know the town charmer claims that I am no longer on the suspect list? He gave me a wide grin.
I do.
Any idea who leaked that information? His smile widened. You? I asked, suddenly breathless. So it's true?
After careful investigation, he said, I've been unable to find any evidence suggesting that you had the intention, access, or ability to poison your tea for Mr. Payne in the way in which it was poisoned.
You believe me, I grinned. I resisted the urge to say, I told you so.
Detective Hayes,
a man with lobster red skin and a deep scowl hobbled toward us.
Mr. Coster, nice to see you. How's the sunburn? Hurts. I learned my lesson, though. Next time I go boating, I'll take sunscreen.
His enchanting British accent stole the edge from his words.
The sunburn won't last long, Grady said. If you're hurting, then you've got to try to stay out of the sun while it heals.
Yeah, the man nodded.
I wore my rain gear all day to keep the sun off my burns. Hot as Hades in long sleeves.
Grady smiled at me.
Mr. Coster moved here from Dorset last week. We met at the ice cream stand on Main.
Ah, I smiled at the newcomer. It's rainy there, I hear. He huffed.
You don't know the half of it.
Mr. Coster nodded at Grady.
While I've got your attention, I'd like to file a report,
he said.
Why?
Grady frowned.
What happened? I was threatened earlier, and I'd like it noted in case it happens again. You never know with these things.
Grady crossed his arms.
Were you harmed in any way? I can take you to the station now, or we can meet there in the morning. Was it someone at this party?
He cast a questioning look in my direction, and I shrugged.
No.
Mr. Coster shook his head.
It was earlier. I was too miserable to rest, so I tried to borrow something to read from one of those little libraries on the boardwalk. And?
He asked, folding his arms in irritation. Uh-oh. I gave Mr. Coster a closer look. Add some rain gear?
And?
Mr. Coster snapped.
I had my eye on a historical romance, but some lunatic chased me with a shovel, yelling, "Put that down!" I was nearly killed. Over what?
He squawked.
There's nothing wrong with men reading romance, is there?
Grady shot me an amused look. I ducked out of the way.
She had a hat about this big, Mr. Coster said.
He mimed the size of my hat with both arms above his head. I went to toss Mr. Waters' clamming shovel in the closet before I wound up on the town's list of homicidal maniacs again. Chapter 15. My cafe had reached max capacity by 7, and I hadn't stopped smiling for at least an hour. Grady ducked out early with a polite goodbye, leaving me to breathe a little easier. He made me nervous in all sorts of ways I preferred not to think about. By 8, I was sure I'd spoken with everyone in town. Folks would float in for a bit, then venture out as another round of guests arrived. I had a police detective and a mystery blogger to thank for the positive turn of my fate. I plucked a date stuffed with Hannah's goat cheese off the buffet and tapped my foot to an old Beach Boy song. Aunt Clara moved to my side and twined her arm with mine. I'd call this shindig a whopping success, wouldn't you? Absolutely. I scanned the crowd, searching for empty plates or glasses to refill and any new arrivals I hadn't greeted yet. My eyes landed on Sam Smart, visible between a pair of women with oversized handbags. He was seated at the corner table, handing out business cards. I hadn't seen him come in, but I wouldn't let him leave without asking him a few questions. "I'll be right back," I told Aunt Clara. I nudged my way around the crush of bodies in the tightly packed room and tried not to question the structural integrity of my home's historic support beams. I helped myself to the empty seat next to Sam as the music changed. "Hello." I forced a bright smile. "I'm glad you could make it. Are you enjoying the party?" He lifted his tea glass with a strained smile.
"Very much."
Tension rolled off him in waves. Had it been there before I'd arrived, or had I triggered it? It was hard to tell with Sam. He always seemed to be some degree of tense. Until recently, I'd assumed that was just his personality. Now, I didn't know. Being accused of murder had opened my eyes in the worst of ways. If a detective, who dealt with criminals for a living, believed I could be a killer, then clearly anyone could be. Sam scanned the room, determined to avoid eye contact. I tried to recall all the possible meanings behind his behavior, but the body language book had been somewhat indeterminate on avoiding eye contact. One page suggested a person who wouldn't look you in the eyes was nervous, possibly hiding something, while the next page said the person might harbor a romantic interest and want to hide it. I didn't think romantic interest was the problem with Sam, but something was definitely going on. He'd looked me in the eye plenty of times before. "Am I making you nervous?" His gaze snapped back to me.
"No. Why?"
I folded my hands on top of the table. "You seem uncomfortable. Like when I stopped by your office a couple days ago. If it's something I've done, I'm really sorry. I've had a rough week."
"It's not you," he said. "I've got a lot on my plate right now. You understand."
Sam checked his watch, his bouncing knee vibrating the table. I might not have made him nervous, but something certainly had. "You know, I'd love to talk with you more," I said, offering up a warm smile. "How about lunch tomorrow?" Sam wet his lips and cleared his throat, appearing to be suddenly rapt with interest. He leaned forward in his seat.
"Are you having any luck with that thing you mentioned before? The one you were looking into?"
"I think so." I held back the part where I'd apparently gained the killer's attention, but didn't know who he was. So now the lunatic was following me around making threats while I tried to keep the tail of my skirt out of my underpants. I matched his posture, leaning my elbows on the table. "Have you thought of something more to tell me?"
"Did you talk to Lucinda?"
The words were barely audible over a group of women belting "Good Day, Sunshine." "I did," I said. "And did you know Mr. Payne was also in a verbal tussle with Mr. Metz over the Colonial on Bayview?" I lifted my brows and waited for his response. He sat back, putting distance between us and breaking the intimate bond of co-conspirators.
"I had heard that, yes."
"Why didn't you tell me? I could have talked to him sooner." He didn't answer. I pushed further. "Is Mr. Metz a friend of yours? Is he a client?" Sam's phone buzzed on the table. He turned it over and peeked at the screen.
"I'm sorry, I need to get going. I have another appointment tonight."
"Wait," I said. "Just a few more questions." The lines on his forehead deepened.
"Lunch tomorrow, okay? Stop by my office."
He stood and tucked his abandoned chair beneath the table.
"Thanks for the tea and hospitality. I appreciate it."
Before I could respond, he'd strode out the door. "See you tomorrow," I muttered to the empty threshold. I made my way back to Aunt Clara in time to see her finish dancing the Freddy near my deck. The crowd had thinned out. I guess this party is winding down. She nearly fell into me, beaming with a goofy smile. "People don't dance enough anymore." I nodded thoughtfully. I couldn't remember the last time I'd danced, in public anyway. My shower and bedroom were another story. "It was such a nice turnout," Clara said. "Even better than I expected." Hannah pulled empty trays from the buffet.
"Yes, and that's it for the sausage balls and cheese straws."
She loaded the platters into my dishwasher, then wiped the counter. Either your food was an incredible hit, or you invited some very hungry people. I laughed. Hopefully the first one. Aunt Fran rocked one antique tea dispenser onto its side and emptied the dregs into the garbage can. This one is cashed. Old-fashioned sun tea was the clear hit of the night. Warmth pooled in my chest, and my spirits lifted impossibly higher. This party was your best idea ever. I patted Aunt Clara's hand and smiled at Aunt Fran. Thank you. The last sprinkling of guests drifted toward the door. Thank you all for coming, I said, hurrying to see them off. Come back any time. There are still a few things on the buffet, and I'd be happy to box something up for you. They politely refused doggy bags, waving as they stepped out into the night. Mr. Waters and his wife were the last ones to the door. Mr. Waters, I caught him by the sleeve. Hang on. I want to send your shovel home so I don't forget it. I dashed to the pantry and back. There you are. Thank you so much for letting me borrow a piece of your history for the night. I smiled, and his wife looked at the shovel and blushed. Mr. Waters shook my hand.
Anytime. You know, we'd stay and help clean up, but it looks like you've got a nice crew here already, and we're running late.
His wife adjusted her little blue hat, the peacock plume in its band swaying back and forth. Everything was delicious, she said. Folks would have taken you up on the offer for leftovers if they were going home. Don't take it personally. My gaze traveled from Mr. and Mrs. Waters to the mass of locals trailing down my front steps. They aren't going home? Is something else happening tonight? I strained to think of what it might be. The street fair wasn't for another 2 days.
Sure, Mr. Waters said. Lucinda's thing started at 8, a party to celebrate Benedict's life. I'm sure you've heard about it. She's been telling folks to spread the word.
I shook my head. No, no one had told me much of anything lately.
Well, he said, motioning to the cafe behind me, you've been busy.
I doubted my busyness was the reason no one in town had told me. His wife leaned against his side and grinned.
She says this party is about Benedict, but we all know she's just announcing her return to charm.
Kind of like she's throwing her own welcome back party,
Mr. Waters said with an amused shake of his head.
But she's calling it a celebration of Benedict's life. So who can say no to that?
The box truck and man in white coveralls blinked into mind. Modern elegance wasn't a new furniture deliverer, as I'd imagined. It was a party rental company. I shot a look at my aunts, who suddenly seemed to be wholly absorbed in their cleanup and pointedly avoiding my gaze. Mr. Waters held the door open for his wife.
Maybe we'll see you there, huh?
Maybe, I whispered, a fuzzy idea taking form in my curious mind. I really shouldn't press my luck and risk that restraining order, I thought to myself. But the town had been on its best behavior here in my cafe, and maybe this was the perfect opportunity to make up with Lucinda. Maybe even make some progress on my fresh start now that there were no strikes against me. I locked the door, then turned to my aunts and Hannah. I'm not going to ask why you didn't tell me about Lucinda Payne's party, I said, so you can all stop trying not to look directly at me. Clara lifted a timid face in my direction. You're not mad? Nope. I went behind the counter to evaluate the leftover situation and see if there was anything left fit to take to a party. An uncut lemon cake was still in the fridge. Perfect. I grabbed my purse and a sweater from the hall closet, returning for the cake. I tell you to just leave this and go home to rest, but I know better. If I'm not back before you go, don't forget to lock up. I kissed my aunt's cheeks and hugged Hannah tight. Then I gave the trio a meaningful stare. You know, I'm really glad I'm back home.
Us too, Clara cooed. We know where you're going, so be careful out there. This hasn't been your week.
I blew an air kiss on my way into the night.
Preach!
I stepped onto the boardwalk, cake in hand. Nerves twisted and pinched in my gut, and a cool sweat broke over my chest and forehead. I didn't want a restraining order, but I also didn't like having an enemy in Lucinda. At least Grady had dropped me as a suspect. That should give me a little cushion if Lucinda didn't respond well to my appearance at her place. And worst case scenario, I wouldn't be legally permitted within a certain distance of her, which I doubted would change my life. Once I proved I didn't hurt her ex-husband, she'd surely lift any restraining order anyway. The party would have been easy to find, even if I hadn't seen Lucinda outside the place this morning. Bistro lights hung in swoops along the wooden backyard fence, only a few dozen feet from where I'd met her on the sidewalk. The measured notes of a waltz lifted gently into the air, and couples streamed arm in arm up the cobblestone path to her home. I filed in behind the ranks, heading for the front door. A buffet had been set up in the room left of the foyer, Mr. Payne's furniture pushed against the walls or removed entirely to allow for rented tables and seating. A man in traditional livery stood behind the overloaded buffet, hands clasped behind his back.
"May I make you a plate?"
I blinked. Buffets were normally self-serve. But then again, everything at this party seemed a little extra. He smiled.
"You have your hands full."
I followed his gaze to the forgotten dessert in my grip. "Oh," I said stupidly. "I brought a cake." My cheeks warmed at the obviousness of the statement. I'd erroneously assumed this party would be a normal one, where the hostess hauled in extra seating and maybe linens if it was a big deal. Otherwise, everyone brought something to share, even if the invitation said dinner was provided. It was just customary. Courtesy, good manners, Southern tradition.
"No one's eating," the man whispered. "I think it looks all right. Do you?"
I scanned the thoughtless spread. Mini meatballs, tuna on rye slices, flat-bottom spoons filled with garlic and mushroom mashed potatoes. "Meh," I said. Hopefully Lucinda hadn't overpaid. I could have put this boring menu together on a dime, though I wouldn't have. Maybe I should offer catering to locals for events like this. Showers, graduation, and anniversary parties? That would be fun. The buffet man leaned closer.
"Well, the food looks better than the desserts. I'm sure of that."
A table on the opposite wall held tiers of marshmallows, graham crackers, pretzels, and strawberries by an erupting chocolate fountain. A balding man in a black polo shirt stuck a pretzel rod under the fountain, then bit into it with a smile. He did it again a moment later, same pretzel. "That's not a dessert table. That's a bacteria incubator," I said to the buffet guy. I ferried my cake to the table and removed the cover. A guest took notice and pointed, whispering. I waved at some familiar faces, stepping away so folks could help themselves. Most of the people in line at the open bar had been at my place earlier and nearly wiped my buffet clean. No wonder Lucinda's spread was virtually untouched, not to mention the fact that it was all unimaginative food in various shades of tan. Lucinda stood among a cluster of women with champagne flutes, and I backed away, suddenly uncomfortable with the possibility of being yelled at in public, accused of party crashing or something worse. I kept assuming Lucinda would be cordial and behave the way I would in her shoes, but she hadn't so far, and I had no reason to think she would now. I scolded myself internally for thinking that crashing her party was a good idea, blaming all the warm and fuzzy feelings from a successful grand opening. Lucinda hadn't come to Sun, Sand, and Tea tonight. She hadn't forgiven me, and asking her to do it publicly seemed beyond risky. I longed to turn and run out the front door, but that would only draw more attention. Instead, I decided to slip out the back and try making amends with Lucinda later, in a more private setting. Putting as many guests between us as possible and attempting to look at ease, I made my way to the back of the house. It was comfortably full of friends and neighbors, chatter and laughter, with interesting conversations, but I didn't hear anything interesting about Mr. Payne's death. Also, praise the waves,
No new gossip about me. In the backyard was a string quartet playing Vivaldi from a stage. Tall bar tables draped in black linen stood on the small lawn. It was the first party I'd attended in Charm that didn't feature margaritas, piña coladas, and barbecue. And if anyone had live music, it was karaoke or a bad Jimmy Buffett cover band. The whole setup Lucinda had going on was weird, over the top, and completely out of place in our little island community. I supposed fancy was the only available option from a company called Modern Elegance. Maybe I was being a beach snob. Everyone seemed to be having a nice enough time, even if they weren't giving me any new information to work with. Lucinda, a woman called. She lifted her arm to draw the hostess's attention. Lucinda moved through the back door, scanning the crowd and smiling. She waved as she moved gracefully across the lawn. I stiffened, then ducked on instinct.
Is that lemon cake?
Grady's voice cut through the night. His head bobbed above the crowd several feet away, a determined expression on his brow. Oh, sure. He left my party early to come to hers. And just like everyone else I'd talked to before Mr. Waters tonight, Grady hadn't mentioned it either. Lucinda hugged several guests before heading purposefully in my direction.
Well, Detective Hayes, she called. I'm so glad you could make it.
She smiled demurely, an entourage of older women in tow. I scooted behind a crowd of men who hadn't noticed me, unready to face her, and I couldn't talk to Grady without risking Lucinda's wrath. Grady moved in a slow circle, sharp eyes hunting for me, before giving up to meet the woman of the house.
Come, I have someone who wants to meet you.
She locked her arm in his and led him back inside. I inched toward the rear gate Mr. Payne had probably used to put out the trash. I wasn't in love with the analogy, but I slipped through the gate anyway and crept through the shadows toward the street like a ninja. I did a double take at the line of bags and cans along the curb. Lucinda hadn't wasted any time moving herself in or Mr. Payne's memories out. Piles were prepped and tagged for disposal. A few were marked as donations. The rest was stuffed into lidless garbage bins, fishing rods, tackle boxes, pool cues, stacks of Historic Home magazine. It was sad to think the things that were important to him were so clearly unimportant to her. I peeked into a box filled with rolled-up blueprints, and the hair on my arms and neck stood at attention. I checked to be sure no one was around before thumbing through the contents. Maps of Charm were intermingled with the blueprints, and Sam Smart's company logo was stamped on the back of every document. My mind raced with a new set of questions. Why would Mr. Payne have had all these maps and blueprints? Was he working on something that had gotten him killed? Something that had to do with Mr. Metz and his colonial renovation, perhaps? I wanted to take a closer look, but could hardly have a seat near the trash and read by moonlight. I'd have to take the box home. So I hefted the box onto one hip. Sleuthing was hard, frustrating work. No wonder Grady was grumpy so often. A soft meow drew my attention to the neighbor's driveway, where my raggedy white cat stood, her bright green eyes eerie and luminous under the light of the full moon. Don't be judgy, I told her. These could be important. Plus, they're on the curb. I'm allowed to take them. She meowed again. I took a few quick steps, struggling to balance the awkward box, and my fitness band trumpeted obnoxiously. Good grief. I froze, tummy clenched and heart hammering. As if a grown woman could simply vanish by holding still enough. A long beat of silence stretched through the night. Even the band had stopped playing. Applause erupted, and I sucked in fresh air. Oh, thank goodness. For a moment, I'd imagined 100 faces peering over the fence at me. I dared a look at the closed gate as a new song began. My gaze drifted higher then, to Lucinda's home beyond. A curtain dropped in an upstairs window. The whole town might not have seen me take the box, but someone had.
Chapter 16. I hightailed it home with the cat at my side. The night seemed darker than usual, though it could have been my imagination. It was after 10 o'clock and well past the slivers of twilight that had struggled on the horizon as I'd made my way to the party. The stars and watching moon had tucked themselves in behind the dark velvet blanket overhead, and the air crackled with a strange new feeling, ominous and foreboding. "I know what you're thinking," I told Maggie as she trotted along at my feet. "Someone saw me take this box, but there's a chance they couldn't identify me because it was dark in the alley." She continued on without response, highly focused on our trip down the boardwalk, as if she knew where I was headed. A brisk evening wind flipped the ends of my hair over my shoulders, sending shivers along my spine. I moved a little faster, hyper aware that most people on the island who weren't already in bed were probably at Lucinda's, which made it a prime time for crime everywhere else. I could be chased, kidnapped, or cloppered, and no one would hear me scream. Even Grady would be none the wiser until a jogger found my body at sunrise. I held the box more tightly to my chest, prepared to use it in self-defense if necessary. Even if whoever I saw at the window knows it was me who took the box, I can always explain myself, I told Maggie. I'll say I'm a map collector. Of course, then I'd have to run out and buy a bunch of old maps from another town and pretend I'd had them all along. So, maybe not. Deceit is hard. Maggie gave me a condescending look. I sighed with relief as my beautiful historic home came into view. Thankfully, the porch light over my front door was on, though the rest of the place was dark. My aunts must have called it a night at Sun Sand and Tea. I jogged up the front steps, maneuvering the box on my hip to free my hand for the key. The tumbler rolled easily, and I was instantly relieved that my aunts had remembered to lock up. Maggie slid between my feet as I checked the street for stalkers before jetting upstairs without waiting for an invitation. I followed her in, then kicked the door shut behind me and flipped the deadbolt back into place, feeling my way through the cafe without turning any lights on and stumbling up the stairs to my private quarters. By the time I reached my living room, I was ready to drop. I lowered my burden onto the floor, then stretched out beside it. The soft fibers of my carpet cushioned my aching limbs. I'd walked more this week than I had in months, and my body felt it everywhere. I stared at the elaborate crown moldings and painted tin panels on my ceiling until my eyelids drooped, grateful to be alone and safe in my house. Maggie leapt onto one arm of my thrift store couch and gave a long, judgmental meow. She was right. I needed to get started. "I'm glad you decided to come up here," I said. It was weird and a little funny that she had stalked me until I noticed her and fell in love, but I was glad for it. I'd heard of dogs following people home, but never a cat. Cats were picky. The fact she'd chosen me of all people to judge and ignore made me feel special. I'd never had a pet before, though this particular animal didn't seem much like a pet. More like a college roommate who came home late and refused to answer questions about where she'd been. Pet also implied a certain amount of reliance on me, and this cat didn't have that problem. "Did you live here before?" I asked, thinking back to Aunt Clara's crazy story about a raggedy cat as the embodiment of the two suicidal women who died here. "You can live here now if you want," I offered. I could use the company, and I have at least 1 million fish and tuna recipes. Her eyelids drooped lazily. "Must be hard being trapped in that cat body for 170 years, I said. "You want to talk about it?" She flopped on her side and licked her paw, completely disinterested. "That's fine. I have things to do anyway." Apparently, rejection was my middle name tonight. First, Grady slipped away from my appropriately relaxed and beachy party to attend Lucinda's over-the-top schmancy soiree. Then Sam ran off on me while I was in the middle of talking to him, and now the cat wouldn't even look at me. There were at least 12 maps and blueprints in the box.
I needed a pot of black coffee or gallon of sweet tea because I hadn't slept well in a few nights. It had been a long day, and my eyelids felt as if someone had tied little weights to them. I blew out a long breath. First things first. I rolled the first map open and pressed it to the floor. It promptly rewound itself. I gave it another shot, this time concentrating on the corners and ends. But the paper spiraled back faster than I could stop it. Narrowing my eyes at the uncooperative paper, I considered my options. There were bunches of maps and blueprints in that box, and I needed a way to look at them without having to hold them in my hands. The nearest bookshelf provided me with an armload of books, which I used to secure the corners. The sight of half a dozen semi-naked cowboys spread out on the floor made me shake my head in dismay. Despite my personal experience and the fact that no woman in my family ever found a lasting love, I was a sucker for happily ever after, especially if the hero wore boots and had good manners. Not even knowing things hadn't worked out for sweet Amelia and her husband could keep me from dreaming about love. Somewhere deep down inside of me, there was a tiny ember of hope that I would meet my soulmate, like in the books. I shifted on to my hands and knees in front of the flattened maps and tried to make heads or tails of whatever I was looking at. "I don't suppose you can read these?" I asked Maggie. "There's a whole lot of blue with a bunch of white lines, plus a few curves and scribbles." And, of course, Sam Smart's company logo stamped on the back of each one. I grabbed my phone to snap several photos. I wouldn't have to haul the box to Sam's place for lunch tomorrow if I had the pictures. I could just show him my phone and see what he had to say. And I congratulated myself for finally planning ahead. Even if Sam wasn't involved in Payne's death, which I truly hoped was the case, he would be able to tell me what I was looking at. Sam's troubled face came back to mind. He hadn't been himself tonight, and he was unquestionably weird at his office yesterday, too. It was probably a waste of time, but I opened the browser and plugged Sam's name in. Hundreds of hits came back, all of them applying to different people. Lawyers, scientists. None had anything to do with the man I wanted to learn more about. I tried again, this time adding some other keywords like realtor and North Carolina. This time, the results were more interesting. I curled against the couch and scrolled through the hits. Sam Smart wasn't just a high-strung small-town real estate agent. He was a thief. Article after article from newspapers and criminal justice websites popped up. Dozens of cases of Sam Smart the fraud all along the East Coast. I flipped through the headlines, mouth open. Illegal gambling charges filed against Virginia Beach real estate agent. Successful Atlanta real estate agent pleads guilty to identity fraud. Savannah's favorite real estate agent removed on 14 counts of embezzlement. I thrashed my head side to side, hoping to clear my brain Etch-a-Sketch style. Gambling? Fraud? Embezzlement? I pored over the articles with greedy eyes. Sam got the charges dropped just as often as he was found guilty and slapped with fines, community service, or both. From the looks of it, the fines must be adding up. I couldn't tell how much he'd paid off so far, but I was sure he didn't make enough selling homes in Charm to put a dent in the bill he had going. Whatever amount of cash he'd accumulated from fraud and embezzlement couldn't have been worth the penalties. He'd practically have to keep up the illegal stuff just to pay the piper. That thought got stuck in my head like barbecue on a spit. What if Sam had gone back to his old ways, forced to make bad choices if he wanted to pay the restitution installments and stay out of jail? What if he'd gotten into trouble again and Mr. Payne had found out? Would Mr. Payne have threatened to go public with Sam's past? Would he have blackmailed him? Or what if Sam was plotting with Mr. Metz to turn all the massive old properties in town into exclusive bed and breakfast locations, or spas, or any number of things that would have made them richer, and Mr. Payne had protested? If Sam and Metz were in cahoots, it would explain why Sam had pointed a finger at Lucinda and not at Mr. Metz. I rubbed my temples.
The ideas came at me faster than I could accept or reject them. Sam and Mr. Payne were at odds the day Mr. Payne died. I'd noticed, but barely paid attention. I'd assumed it was silly, like most of Mr. Payne's arguments. My imagination soon went from clever and creative to downright scary as it wove together endless scenarios that made Sam Smart a heartless killer. Suddenly, lunch together in his office seemed significantly less appealing. My phone buzzed and I nearly screamed in surprise. I swiped the screen to reveal a new text from Grady, a message as direct as the man himself.
"Are you home?"
The doorbell rang before I could respond. Thank goodness. I'd scared myself half senseless thinking of reasons Sam or Mr. Metz could have killed Mr. Payne and put me next on their hit list. I barreled down the staircase to the first floor, typing my quick response and nearly breaking my neck on the crazy cat who darted between my feet. "Yes, I've got something you'll want to see." I flipped the deadbolt and yanked the door open. A cool gust of wind whooshed in. Maggie ran screeching into the night, and my heart rate accelerated. There was no one at my door. I poked my head carefully past the threshold, one hand on the doorknob, ready to slam it in the face of anyone who came near. Except Grady. "Grady?" I asked the air, hoping he'd stepped into the shadows along my porch. I listened hard to the whipping wind and ocean waves, refusing to step foot into the darkness again without a Louisville slugger or pepper spray. Maggie trotted back into view and took a seat on my bottom step, tracking something with her shiny green eyes. My phone buzzed, pulling my eyes down. A new message from Grady.
"I probably misunderstood that, but I'll be right over."
As I read his words and smiled, a blast of blinding light flashed in my eyes, and my knees wobbled. Searing pain short-circuited my brain, and my legs gave out as the world went dark. Chapter 17.
"Everly!"
The sound of my name rattled painfully in my head.
"Everly?"
Warm fingers pressed the tender flesh of my throat, and I struggled through the thickness of unconsciousness. I groaned, wishing to be left alone. My body ached, and my eyes rolled helplessly behind sealed lids.
"You're going to be okay, thank God,"
the voice said. Strong arms ran beneath my hips and shoulders, hoisting me in the air. "Grady?" The word came from my mouth, but I wasn't sure how I knew it. His chest bounced with a humorless chuckle.
"You're easily the most danger-prone person I've ever met. The good news here is that it looks like you'll survive this time. You want to fill me in on what happened?"
I rocked and floated in his arms. The intoxicating scents of cologne and night air clung to his shirt and skin. I locked my arms around his neck in appreciation. "I don't know." He set me upright on the couch, prodding my head, neck, and arms.
"I don't understand what happened. It hasn't been 10 minutes since your last text, and you were laid out on the floor at the bottom of your steps like you were dead. There's a goose egg the size of Texas on your head, but no other injuries that I can see. Did you fall?"
I pried my eyelids open. "Ow!" Grady rested his hand on my arm.
"What hurts? Is it just your head?"
I feel like I was struck by lightning. I did a quick inventory of my body. Nothing hurt specifically, aside from my forehead. I just felt achy all over. He lifted his hand.
"Is your vision blurry? How many fingers am I holding up?"
2. I pushed his hand down. His hand popped back up. One digit pointed at the ceiling, and he moved it slowly back and forth.
"Can you follow my finger?"
"Stop it," I said, swatting his hand away once more. "I'm fine." He stared back, lips downturned.
"You could have a concussion. I'm a trained medic. Now stop fussing and start cooperating, or I'll take you to the hospital."
A medic? What was this, World War II? I piped down and let him check me over. I'd been a regular patron of emergency rooms while following Wyatt and his friends with the rodeo, and I'd taken several first aid courses to prepare myself for assisting injured cowboys. So I knew Grady was right. I also knew what a concussion looked like, and I was pretty sure I didn't have one. When he finished his exam, he relinquished his too-close stance by an inch.
"Then tell me what you remember."
I rubbed my forehead. "I remember you were at the door."
"Wrong."
I dropped my hand. "You weren't at the door?" "Well, someone was."
"No. When I got here, the door was open and you were on the ground. I thought you fell down the steps and broke your neck."
He rubbed a heavy hand over his face.
"It wasn't me at the door. What else can you remember?"
I forced my addled mind to recall something else, any detail that might be useful. "There was a bright light and pain." I wrinkled my nose. "A ton of pain, and it still hurts." A tear slid down my cheek. Grady's face went from red to eggplant colored.
"So you didn't fall. Someone did this to you."
He reached for me again, running his broad hands over my head, face, and neck. He moved a palm to my torso, and I winced.
"Did that hurt? Can you take a deep breath? You might have bruised your ribs in the fall. Can I take a look?"
I chewed my lip. "This feels like a game of doctor I played once in middle school." He rolled his eyes.
"Just let me see."
"That's exactly what he said." I took a deep breath to clear my head, wincing from the pain. "Okay, but don't look." Grady made a face.
"What? How can I see but not look?"
"I don't know. I can't think straight." Grady dialed his phone and stood up, pacing the floor. I watched him until a tidal wave of anxiety hit, and I tipped forward to place my head between my knees. This was the worst day ever. Bad, bad, bad.
"She was attacked,"
Grady barked into the phone.
"Right inside her front door. Where the hell was that patrol I asked for?"
Attacked? The word brought everything together. "I was attacked?" Grady shot me a look. "Someone attacked me," I said, covering the goose egg with both hands. Grady finished his call and returned to the couch.
"Stop saying that. I get madder every time I hear it." "Try to remember what happened, because I sent you a text when I was leaving Lucinda's to make sure you got home safely. Then I got a response saying you had something you thought I'd like to see. 10 minutes later, you were out cold."
I remember that," I said. I hadn't until he said it, but I knew it was right. "I don't know what it was that I wanted to show you, though."
"I didn't see any signs of a break-in downstairs,"
he said.
"This place is as neat and tidy as mine ever is. And I've got someone tending to it. Your door wasn't damaged. Your television and computer are here. I don't think it was a robbery. I suppose that even you don't have that bad of luck."
I stared at his boots resting on my soft carpeting, and a fuzzy memory took shape. "My maps!" I jolted to my feet, then sat immediately back down, palm on forehead.
"Sit still."
Grady went to my kitchen and filled a glass with ice water. He set it near the fridge and took a bag of frozen peas from the freezer, handing it to me.
"What were you playing doctor for in middle school? Didn't you know better by then?"
I put the peas against my forehead. "I was a late bloomer." He pushed the glass of water in my direction with a lazy half smile.
"Drink up. Hydrate."
I sipped gingerly at first, then gulped the glass dry. Grady's expression turned sad.
"I can't believe I let this happen to you."
I set my hand on his arm to comfort him. "It wasn't your fault." He searched my face with keen cop eyes.
"Let's start again."
Okay, I agreed, pulling my thoughts back together.
"This doesn't look like the scene of a robbery, but you said something is missing? Your maps?"
"Oh, right." I moved my hand away. Being knocked over the head was rough on a brain. "There was a box of blueprints and a few maps of charm outside Mr. Payne's house, so I brought them home. I swear they were with the other trash and donations. A totally legal find." Grady pinched the bridge of his nose with his thumb and forefinger.
"I knew that was your lemon cake at the party. That's why I texted you. When I couldn't find you, I assumed you'd left. Just marched out into the night like some lunatic hasn't been tearing up your cafe and making threats on your life all week.
He dropped his hand and leveled me with a pleading stare. Why would you even go over there?
Lucinda told me she wanted a restraining order against you. I told her she had insufficient grounds, so now I'm on her blacklist too.
A flimsy wave of guilt swept through me, mostly for crashing her party. It was just bad manners. I wasn't even sure where to begin explaining why I'd gone to Lucinda's. I had about a dozen reasons in my head and heart. For starters, I said, sighing. I wanted folks to know I hadn't done anything wrong, and I wasn't afraid to show my face at Mr. Payne's life celebration. I even brought the cake as a show of goodwill.
And if I'm being honest, I was angry that Lucinda would have the nerve to threaten me when I haven't given her reason.
I've never given anyone reason to threaten me. I hate bullies. So what if I found her ex-husband on the night he died? That's all I did. It wasn't wrong. It was happenstance. Also, I tend to do things without thinking. Sometimes. I'm working on it.
Grady moved his head in slow, deliberate nods. So going to Lucinda's had nothing to do with snooping or eavesdropping?
I listened, a little, I admitted.
He circled a wrist in the universal symbol for move it along. Keep talking. Tell me the part where you stole out of the trash.
I gave him a grade A stink eye. You can't steal trash. I brought that stuff home and unrolled all the maps and blueprints on my floor.
I gave the expanse of empty carpeting a long look. All that remained of my elaborate setup were the romance novels scattered across the floor. I used those books to hold down the corners.
I took a few cleansing breaths to clear my mind and move the bag of peas from my pounding head to my aching side. Everything feels like it happened in a dream.
I caught Grady's eye. This was my fault, not yours. I'm stubborn and impulsive, and I can't listen to a proper warning, apparently.
It has nothing to do with you.
His eyes bulged. I'm the town's only detective. This is the town's only homicide investigation. In what twist of reality is this not about me?
First of all, I flicked a finger in his direction. Stop yelling at me.
He ground his teeth.
I had no way of knowing any of these awful things were going to happen, okay? I started out trying to do the right thing. I wanted to clear my name because you implied that my tea was poisoned on the night Mr. Payne died, and I wanted to get him justice because he didn't deserve what happened to him. So I started asking my own questions. You, I paused for dramatic effect, were only looking at me as a suspect. How could you find the real killer like that? Within 24 hours, I was getting shoved into marshes and threatened with cryptic messages written in sunscreen. I couldn't quit then. If the killer already knew what I was up to, it was only a matter of time before I would end up like Mr. Payne. So I pushed harder, figuring once I knew who the killer was and had them put in jail, I'd be safe. That part isn't going as fast as I'd hoped. Trust me, I'd like to let this go, but I'm already in past my knees.
Grady looked at my knees. I've already told you you're off my suspects list, so you can strike that one from your excuse arsenal. As for the marsh, the sunscreen, and the break-in at your cafe, I'd say being attacked at your front door is a clear escalation, and continuing to pursue this is going to land you in the hospital or worse. So you need to back off.
He rolled his shoulders and massaged the muscles there with a grimace.
I don't even know why you mentioned your knees.
In past your knees? I repeated the phrase more slowly, waiting for him to get it. You know, I patted them for clarity.
I know what knees are.
He lowered himself onto my couch and dropped his head over the back. It's a water thing. I folded my legs beneath me and twisted to face him. At first, you just want to get your feet wet, test the temperature, no big deal. But it feels good. So you take a few steps and the waves get the bottom of your dress or your rolled up pants wet. So you figure, oh well. And you stand there while the waves pull the sand from beneath your feet until the next thing you know, you're wet up to your knees. And at that point, you're already halfway in.
so you might as well dive headlong through the next wave and just enjoy it. He turned his tired face in my direction.
That was very descriptive.
Thanks. I considered my situation. Are you any closer to knowing who did it than you were when we met?
Yes,
he answered without hesitation, and there was no doubt in his tone. He locked his gaze on mine.
I can get this case wrapped up if you'll let it go. What I can't do is solve a murder and look after you at the same time. After an attack like this, I'm going to have a hard time not looking in on you as much as I can. You have no idea what it was like to see you lying there at the bottom of the steps like that.
Emotion flashed in his eyes. How about we strike a deal? I offered. I'll do my very best to stay out of this from now on, but I just remembered I have something you'll want to see.
How can I know you'll keep your word?
He asked. I drew an X over my heart.
Not good enough.
I came back to Charm for a new start, and I've got stuff I want to do with my life. I won't do anything to mess it up.
What kind of stuff?
I'd like to make Sun, Sand, and Tea a success, I said. I want it to be one of those places that tourists tell other people about, like, oh, if you're anywhere near Charm, you've got to stop for some sweet tea at this little shop on the boardwalk. He smiled. I'd also like to find my soulmate and get married on the beach, surrounded by wild horses. His gaze darted to the array of cowboy-covered books on my floor. I kept going, lifting one hand to tick off my list with my fingers. I want to host my own cooking show and teach people how to make authentic Southern sweet tea. Maybe have a couple of daughters and a dog, maybe a cat. Where was Maggie anyway? I thought. And why was I telling Grady such personal things? My mouth opened again before I could stop it. I want to grow old rocking my grandkids on that porch and telling them crazy stories about how I met their grandpa and how wild their mother was as a child. Grady furrowed his brow.
You don't want a son?
Swan women usually have girls, I said. It was an unintentional, unrehearsed, knee-jerk response that had been drilled into my head for nearly 30 years. I shrugged through a blush. That's silly, I know. My family has all these crazy ideas, legends, unusual history. And I say I don't believe it, but you ask me something simple like that, and I tell you exactly what I've always been told. I groaned, moving the peas back to my head. I've never considered having a son because I've always assumed I won't. Swan women have daughters. We're also cursed in love, so my dreams of growing old with my husband are just that. Dreams. I guess I'll have to be content with a successful business and a cooking show. Grady stretched long legs out in front of him.
Don't most people have nice family stories? Tall tales of amazing feats designed to teach younger generations something like perseverance or morality?
I smiled, realizing for the first time that all the Swan stories were new to him. It gets worse. We aren't cursed to never find love. That would be too easy. No, we always find it, and we're blissful for a while, until the unlucky man succumbs to an untimely and occasionally gruesome death, or leaves us forever. I pulled my phone from my pocket and opened up the photos. Grady pulled his chin back.
Wow.
I shot him an I told you so look and changed the depressing subject. Here. I pushed my phone in his direction with a picture of an unrolled map center screen. The blueprints were all stamped with Sam Smart's company logo, and I just learned that he's a fraud and an embezzler. I think he might have been working with Mr. Metz on something, and Mr. Payne got involved. Grady didn't respond to my revelations. He swiped through the collection of photos I'd taken, enlarging some, bypassing others.
I need copies of these.
He accessed my share feature without asking and emailed the files to himself.
So what happened to your dad?
He asked, daring a glance in my direction as he worked.
Was he a victim of the Swan curse?
Sudden, massive heart failure, age 36. Grady cringed.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't born yet.
Your mom?
I'd nearly forgotten I'd already told him about my parents. The doctors said it was postpartum depression. My great aunts say it was a broken heart. His expression crumbled further. I clamped a hand over my mouth. Why couldn't I stop talking? Grady returned the phone to my lap and gave my other palm a squeeze.
It's like I always say, we can't choose our families.
The thick, gravelly tone in his voice made me think there was a heavy meaning behind those words. What was wrong with his family? The defrosting peas began to drip down the front of my pretty dress. Do you mind if I shower and change before you leave? I'm not ready to be alone.
Take your time.
He drew his phone from his pocket and tapped the screen to life.
I've got plenty I can do from right here.
Thanks. I returned the peas to the freezer, then headed for my room. I stood under the steaming hot shower until my skin was pruney. Afterward, I dabbed a little lip gloss on and gave the mascara wand a couple swings before leaving the bathroom. I stepped into my comfiest pajamas and went to find Grady. He was already on his feet when I reemerged. He did a double take and smiled.
There are ponies on your pants.
I like ponies. His smile grew wider.
You'll have to come by the house after we get the stables built.
The what? I stammered.
Stables. It's where we keep the horses. Stop me if it starts to sound familiar.
He broke into a gentle laugh. I tried not to imagine him on horseback. Grady was not a cowboy or a potential love interest. He was my new friend, of which I could use plenty. Are you buying horses?
No. My family raises and trains them. I grew up in the saddle, and Denver misses his colt. I figured I'd bring him and a couple of our others to Charm. Do you ride?
I nodded woodenly.
You look pale.
Grady strode to my side and grasped my elbow.
Maybe you'd better let me help you into bed.
I made a strangled sound, but followed him to my room and shuffled toward my bed. Another thing weighing on my mind. Grady? He grunted softly. I'm truly sorry about your wife. He waited while I climbed into bed, sizing me up for another long moment.
I didn't handle her loss well. Not at first. Not for a long while. That's why I'm here. When I finally got it together, I realized I had to get out of our house, out of Charlotte. I needed a big change, one that would serve Denver, because nothing else mattered. I might be hurting, but it's not about me.
The cost of his words was etched in the lines on his forehead. I knew this was information he didn't give freely, or to anyone he didn't trust. My heart bled for him, and in that moment, the mysterious new detective seemed impossibly human.
Get some sleep,
he said, before turning and walking out. I stared at the open door behind him. He returned a few minutes later with another glass of water, a bottle of aspirin, and Maggie at his feet. She leapt onto the foot of my bed and purred.
He makes a good guard cat, huh?
Grady said. She, I corrected, tossing back a couple pills. I downed the water, then slid further under the covers. And if she plans to stay here often, she's getting a bath. Maggie hissed. I stuck out my tongue at her. Grady gave me a peculiar look.
I'm gonna walk through the house, check all the window and door locks. Use the deadbolt on my way out. I'll return your house key tomorrow. I found it on the floor beside you in the foyer.
Okay, I said sleepily.
I'll patrol the perimeter before I leave, and I'll send a car to sit watch tonight. No one will bother you while you sleep. That's a promise.
He slipped into the hallway, pulling the door shut behind him. I listened as he walked from room to room, then outside across the wooden beams of my porch. Finally, I heard the engine of his vehicle rev to life and grow quiet in the distance. I was facing dreams of Grady Hayes on horseback, and I knew it. I would rather have taken my chances with the killer. Chapter 18. The next morning was long and slow, bogged down by confusing memories from the night before. The knot on my head reminded me, with every quick twist or turn, of the danger I'd been in. The danger I was likely still in. Now that my box of fancy clothes was open, I'd chosen a knee-length A-line sundress and dug out a pack of those silicone stick-on brassiere cups to avoid unnecessary pressure on my tender ribs. So far, the cups were earning their keep, though I wasn't sure how. Sorcery came to mind. Luckily, the only thing on my schedule today, besides the usual cafe stuff, was putting on a brave face.